This is Jay Sekulow. Breaking news. North Korea blinks.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
Real and authentic. That is what one of our sources close to the South Korean president is describing the offer from North Korea. But he quickly warns the devil is in the detail.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
The White House looking at this very skeptically because President Trump knows well. We've been here a number of times, all the way back to 1994. And why would the North Korean behavior be any different this time around? But then at the same time, holding out some hope that maybe things might be different.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Everybody, while I was in Washington yesterday, a major development took place, and that was, I'll read first the statement from the South Koreans, and this was a statement released by the North Koreans to the South to be distributed to everyone else. The North side, quote, clearly affirmed its commitment to the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula and said it would have no reason to possess nuclear weapons should the safety of its regime be guaranteed and military threats against the North Koreans removed. This was according to the news agency there. President Trump tweeted out this morning, possible progress being made in talks with North Korea for the first time in many years. A serious effort is being made by all parties concerned. The world is watching and waiting. Maybe false hope, but the U.S. is ready to go hard in either direction. So the United States, so I think what's happened here, we're going to get our military experts in a moment. I think the North Koreans, between the sanctions that have been imposed and between their crumbling ability to feed their own citizens and take care of their own citizens, and the threats that are coming from the United States, which are significant because they're not just threats, and that they realize that they're in a very difficult position and that the United States is not going to be bullied by the North Koreans. The North Koreans also said that they were willing to have direct conversations with the United States.
That's right. So that, I think, is a big takeaway right there, that during those negotiations, they would freeze their nuclear program, take it with a grain of salt, but that they would not be continue testing nuclear devices, and that ultimately they would be opening to abandoning completely their nuclear arms program. Now, all of this has to be handled at the utmost levels of diplomacy and, again, understanding who you are dealing with, which is a nation which has said they have done that, they will do this once before, and were caught violating the agreement. So it's good news that they are willing to sit down diplomatically across the table from the United States. And I think here's the reason why. President Trump scares the North Koreans to death. They can't predict him. They can't figure him out. They don't know at any moment when he may, in their mind, issue airstrikes against their nuclear facilities, airstrikes against Pyongyang. They talk a big game in North Korea, but they know that if the might of the U.S. military was raining down on Pyongyang and their nuclear facilities, there'd be real issues. So I think because of the sanctions and their lack of understanding of our president, which is a very good thing,
right,
because he is unpredictable in the eyes of North Koreans, because of that, they are now willing to go to the table. They fear, probably for the first time in a long time, a U.S. president.
Similar to the way they feared Ronald Reagan, is the truth of the matter.
Yeah.
President Obama was going to have direct negotiations with them. When they were about to start the negotiations, they put off a weapon right before that. Same thing happened under George W. Bush. Could they do that again? Yes.
And that's why the president put that
and
in
And I think
tweet.
When the president is smart to say it could be a false hope.
Yeah.
But the fact that the United States is ready to go and ready to meet and that they're saying they're willing to meet, I think bodes well, at least for an opportunity for diplomacy. If you can, you know, look, diplomacy is war without violence, Benjamin Disraeli famously said. I'll say that quote again. Diplomacy is war without violence. Because diplomacy, you're trying to get to an objective. War, you try to get to an objective. There's just different ways of doing it. We're going to get our military analysts involved in this. We want your comments as well. We'll take all those when we come back from the break.
Yeah, 1-800-684-3110. Do you agree? Are you excited about this opportunity for the U.S. to sit down across the table with North Korea and get them to, at least during those talks, freeze their nuclear program and then ultimately maybe even abandon that program as a necessary step before there's any talk of military action? Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. We'd love to get your thoughts on that. I know we got a lot of veterans, people who served in Korea and on that DMZ, listen to the broadcast. Remember, we've got a matching challenge right now. Whatever you're able to donate is doubled. You can donate online at aclj.org. Double the impact of your gift to the ACLJ. We'll be right back.
It's a critical time for our nation and for the world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important than right now. At the ACLJ, we're engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family. Defending human life, standing up for our good friend Israel, working to uncover the deep state, the massive corruption in Washington, battling to end the genocide of Christians in many parts of the world, and a firm commitment to back constitutional efforts to protect our country from radical Islamic terrorists. You can learn more about the mission and work of the ACLJ online at aclj.org. There's not a better time to stand with the ACLJ, become a member, and make a difference as we work to protect your constitutional and religious freedoms. You can become a member of the ACLJ online. Sign up right now, aclj.org. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks, from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
We're taking your calls on this topic, by the way, and that is that North Korea is saying they're willing to have direct negotiations with the United States. The president couched it carefully. He said possible progress being made in talks with North Korea. For the first time in many years, a serious effort is being made by all parties concerned. The world is watching and waiting. Maybe false hope, but the U.S. is ready to go hard either way, in either direction. So this came on the heels of the statement by the North Koreans through the South Koreans that they are willing to sit down and talk about denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula and willing to have direct talks with the United States. So we're going to talk to our military experts, Colonel Wes Smith, Colonel Skip Ash, both the United States Army, both served in Korea. We're taking your calls as well, especially if you served in the military in that region. That'd be very helpful to hear from you. We'd love your comments at 1-800-684-3110. Tell them to go to Wes first. What's your read of this?
Yeah, I think we have to sit down and take it at face value, but do it with a certain amount of cynicism and with our eyes wide open. I think there are a number of reasons. Jordan alluded to one of them, that Donald Trump is unpredictable to them. They fear him in sort of a good way for us. But I think the two major issues as far as the motivation why North Korea is doing this is, I think the sanctions are really pinching them.
Yep.
And it's hurting them, and they want relief. But also, they probably want to drive a wedge between South Korea and the United States, and this is one way to do it. However, Jay, here's the thing we need to do differently this time. We need to sit down and talk with them. But they will come in, and it's so predictable. They've done this since 1994. They will ask for food, for fuel, for the easing of sanctions, for aid. And every time in the past, at the beginning of the talks, we have eased the sanctions and given them food, fuel, and aid. This time, going into the talks and during the talks, yeah, there needs to be no concessions, no easing of sanctions, no food, no fuel, no aid, before and during. And if we give them relief, we give them once the talks have successfully concluded.
Yeah. All right, Skip, you served there as well in the region. I think the president couched it appropriately by saying possible progress and the world is watching, but maybe a false hope. What's your sense?
I agree with that. I think we need to walk in with our eyes open. For the past 25 years, we have been dealing with them, and every time they agree to something, they break the agreement. But I think we need to just consider a couple things. One is, meeting with the United States is a legitimizing factor for them. It means that they are players on the world scene. So that's not necessarily a negative thing from their perspective. I think that's a positive thing. The other thing is, as Wes said, we have to really play this close with respect to South Korea, because they are the ones that are threatened if a war breaks out. They're the ones whose capital is within artillery range of the North. And so they're the ones who really would like to have this peace. But
let me ask you a question about that, Skip. Okay, I get the sense from the South Korean leadership that they are less concerned. They act like they're less concerned about the North than we are.
I think so. But even during the Olympics, I don't know if you saw some of the people in South Korea were burning, you know, portraits of Kim Jong-un and things like that. So there is a strong anti-North Korean part of the South Korean population. And they realize that the North Koreans, their ultimate desire is unification of Korea under the North. And I think one of the things that's going to be demanded of the North to have this peace where they would supposedly give up their weapons would be the withdrawal of U.S. forces from South Korea. If that ever happened, the South Koreans are toast because it takes a lot of effort to take our forces out and it takes a lot of effort to bring them back in. So I think the American population may say the South didn't play with us when we were there. They agreed to have us withdraw, and now they want us back when things go bad. And I think we have to keep all that in mind as we talk with the North Koreans.
Let me play what the president said June of last year. This was about the North Koreans and strategic patience, which has been the kind of was the Obama approach to this. Take a listen.
The era of strategic patience with the North Korean regime has failed. Many years, and it's failed. And frankly, that patience is over.
Jordan?
Well, I think what we want to know from our listeners is this. Give us a call at 1-800-684-3110. If you believe the era of strategic patience is over, don't you believe that this is the kind of necessary step you must take if the offer's on the table? You go into it with good faith, eyes wide open, into these diplomatic negotiations. You look what is an enemy in the eye to try and figure out if you would go forward with any kind of interim agreement, test agreement at all, because you try to do everything possible to prevent a military action being necessary. And I think that is what we must do if that offer is on the table. It is right now, it appears. How long that remains on the table, we don't know. How long that will even last, we don't know. But I think for anybody who believes this ultimately is going to be solved only by military action, you have to take the appropriate steps leading up to that action to try and prevent it sure. because of the potential for significant loss of civilian life of our allies, like in South Korea. Because of that, I want to hear from people, maybe people who served in Korea, served on the DMZ, veterans, people who have family members who are serving there right now. What are your thoughts on this? 1-800-684-3110 is the number you call to talk to us on the air. That's 1-800-684-3110. John is calling in from Minnesota online, too. He's got thoughts on this as well. John, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, John.
Hello. Hi, guys.
Hey.
I have one comment, and that's that I hope and pray I'm wrong, but I just know the history of Japan where diplomats were talking about peace with the U.S. and tricking us. And World War II developed and Pearl Harbor was bombed.
Yep.
So I hope and pray I'm wrong, but I just hope that we exercise extreme caution in this. I think they will. I think that Trump will.
Yeah, pray with your eyes open, too. I'm with you. I mean, not only be eyes open when you're negotiating, if you're praying, pray with your eyes open. I think that's an important thing. Wes, go ahead.
Yeah, you can enter into talks with an enemy without being played by the enemy. And I think that's what President Trump is doing, is willing to do. And I think that's what we need to do. I have almost 100% doubts about the sincerity of Kim Jong-un in North Korea. But on the other hand, you can talk to them without being played by them. You can go in and be engaged in tough negotiations with the North. And again, I'll say it again, I think it's important that we need to change how we do this. In the past,
yep.
every time we've gone in, we've given concessions up front, trying to get them to play nice. This time, there needs to be no concessions up front or during the talks, only after the talks have successfully concluded.
Let me ask, Skip, I'm going to run three Facebook questions we've got for you because they're all kind of related. Lynn on Facebook writes, I don't believe the words of the North Koreans at all. Bernard on Facebook writes, is there a military option if this breaks down? And Bev on Facebook writes, isn't North Korea working with Iran? So let's start with Bev's questions first. North Korea is working with Iran.
Absolutely. North Korea is so in need of hard currency that they're selling their missile technology, anything they can, to this pariah, these evil states around the world that are trying to also nuclearize like Iran. So, yes, there is an active trade between Iran and North Korea with respect to weaponry.
Okay, let me go to the first question, which was I'll go to Wes on this one. And that is, well, let me go to actually the second one on Wes, because this is more of a military question. Is there a military option if this breaks down with North Korea? We've talked about that before.
Good generals and admirals will tell you there is always a military option.
Yeah.
In this case, I think that if these talks are not successful, and I pray they are, I don't believe they will be, but if they're not successful, as we have said on this broadcast before, we have a binary choice, and that is to acquiesce and allow them to have nuclear-tipped ICBMs or go in and take some either surgical, strategic military action or an overall invasion to stop them from doing it. If these talks fail, that's the only choices we have. And to Skip's comment about Iran and North Korea, they've been allies for years. And as I told you this morning during our staff meeting, North Korea needs cash.
Yep.
Iran is flush with cash, thanks to the Barack Obama administration. So it's a marriage made in heaven for them.
Yep. All right, so let me ask you, Jordan, this is because I think this is the political question. This is from Lynn on Facebook. The president has couched this by saying the world is watching and waiting. Maybe false hope, but the U.S. is ready to go hard in either direction. And Lynn writes, I don't believe a word the North Koreans say. I don't think the president does either.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I think that what the president understands is what I said, which is you have to take it with a grain of salt. But if you believe that long-term this may take military action, you take every opportunity available to prevent that. The South Koreans went there in good faith trying to prevent that military action because the impact it would have on their people the most directly. Of course, U.S. troops would be in harm's way as well. There could be significant loss of life in an action like this.
Yep.
So that you take those steps knowing that you're probably being lied to. And if they don't agree to the real monitoring of their programs, then certainly you cannot trust them. They cannot be trusted just by a handshake and an agreement. If monitors are not allowed in, that means no agreement, and it means we go back to where we are right now, which probably means a path to some kind of military action. How large that is or limited that is can be debated, but we know that Secretary Mattis, that he is working on those plans, that they already have military plans in place. I truly believe this is North Korea trying to buy time. The sanctions are very tough, hitting them hard, and they can't predict our president. They are very nervous about a president. They used to be able to predict our presidents and kind of play around with them. They can't predict Donald Trump at any moment. At any moment, with one of these tests that they fire off, I think they believe he could fire back with an actual working nuclear weapon. And because of that, they're kind of running scared a little bit, which is a good position to have them in. It's just how long do they stay in that position? Again, we're going to continue this discussion. We got another segment coming up here, taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. And our matching challenge, double the impact of your donation to the ACLJ at aclj.org.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. Patty on Facebook says, do we have military positions on the border of North Korea? It's called the DMZ. Wes, talk about it, and then Skip, I want you to share your experience as well.
Yeah, the DMZ is about a two-mile-wide buffer zone between the two Koreas, but to answer her question, yes, we have U.S. military personnel all over Korea. Camp Casey is up in the north, closer to North Korea. It's where the 2nd Infantry Division is located. We have Marines there. We have Army. We have air assets. We have naval personnel. We have a lot of folks there. And in addition to that, the South Korean Army, the ROK Army, Republic of Korea, are highly trained, very proficient, and armed with the latest weapons, thanks to us. And so our defensive posture there is quite strong.
So, Skip, you actually had a tank battalion there, correct?
That's correct. I commanded a tank battalion at Camp Casey, and I served twice over there. Once in what they call the bowling alley, the main route from the border into Seoul, I was in there, and then I went to Camp Casey, my second tour, and I commanded a tank battalion. And my motor pool was in artillery range of the north. So we lived every day knowing that we could be attacked at any moment. So it was one of those things that we work 7 days a week to deal with that, and our Army is still doing that. Our Army always has plans for contingencies, although there's always a saying in the military, and that is no plan survives contact, because you have an enemy on the other side trying to accomplish its thing. But yes, we have forces there. We have plans to bring in forces relatively quickly from the States, from Hawaii, from the continental United States, if anything goes up. And I know that the Secretary of Defense and the Joint Chiefs of Staff are working this hard.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Kendra in Washington State, online for Kendra. Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hey.
Hey.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Good. Well, I just had a comment about, you know, you asked if you felt that, you know, we should stand behind our president, and I think that we should. Of course, he went in there hoping for the best, I'm sure, and it... How much can you expect? I mean, really, how long have we been dealing?
Well, let's be clear with what he said. So he said possible. He counts. I thought the president's wording this was really well done. Possible progress being made in talks with North Korea. So let's break that down. First. So Jordan, from the diplomatic standpoint, he's setting the bar very low.
Yeah, possible progress being made to even have the talks. That it's possible that we're even going to have these talks,
right,
but not definite.
Then the second sentence, Wes, says, for the first time in many years, a serious effort is being made by all parties concerned. You've looked at it historically, and that's true.
That is true. And the devil will be in the details. You have to understand that in order for this to work, even if they agree to freeze their weapons programs and to not do any testing, as we've said already, I think they are buying time. But verification will be key. North Korea is a hermit kingdom. In the 6 years since Kim Jong-un's
been
in power.
Describe what that means when you say a hermit kingdom.
Yeah, they are totally cut off from the rest of the world. In the 6 years that Kim Jong-un has been in power, he has never officially met any other head of state. He has never traveled outside of North Korea. It is a very isolated place. And so the only way these talks can work, we can't take them at their word that they're going to freeze,
right,
and that they're going to quit testing. We would have to have international inspectors go in and to really verify this. And Jay, in my opinion, there is no way Kim Jong-un is going to agree to inspectors coming into his country. It would reveal some of their secrets. But in addition to that, with our satellite surveillance, we know where some of their missile and nuclear sites are. We don't know where all of them are.
Yeah.
And if he lets inspectors in, then we will know more about where they are. And I just can't see Kim Jong-un allowing that.
I'm going to ask Skip I'm going to read the last question on the president. It says, the world is watching and waiting. Maybe false hope, but the U.S. is ready to go hard in either direction. What does he mean by either direction in your view, Skip?
I think he means if the talks pan out and we can achieve peace that way, that's a way to go. But if it can't, we still have the military option, and it's going to be an option that the North Koreans will not survive. So I think he's willing to go either way. And that's, as you said earlier, you know, use of military force is diplomacy by other means. And that's one of those things that has to be always available to the president in order to make progress in talks with a regime like this.
All right, so we're taking your calls at 800-684-3110. Let's go ahead and take another phone call. And again, if you've served in the region, we really want to hear from you. or have had family that served in the region, really want to hear from you. Let's go ahead and take a call, Jordan.
Yep, back to the phones we go. Tyrone in Indiana on line one. Tyrone, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Tyrone.
How you doing, Jay? Jay, I would really personally like to see, in addition to the talks, if North Korea would agree to whatever it is that they're going to talk about, that they would, the United States would also hold back giving them the, releasing the sanctions, yeah, the food and the money and this and that, at least for 6 months to a year, just to see if Kim Jong-un is going to do and abide by whatever the agreements come to.
Yeah. So, Tyrone, you're saying something similar to what our Colonel Wes Smith just said, which is it's fine to relieve the sanctions at the appropriate time. Now, I don't know if it's 6 months or a year, but but the idea of not just saying, here, we're going to give you relief of sanctions, that's not the way to go here.
That is not the way to go. And, you know, what's that saying? You know, the height of stupidity is trying the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result.
Right.
We have tried that. We have gone in with the carrot and said, okay, we'll ease the sanctions. We've given them food. We've given them fuel. We've given them some cash. And every time it doesn't work. So Tyrone's exactly right. We need to make sure that going into this, that relief of sanctions and aid comes after the fact, not before the fact.
Yeah. I think that's exactly right. Do we have time for another call? Well, I'll tell you what. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to the two callers we got that are on the line right now, stay on the line. We'll try to clear some lines up for you. If you want to talk to us, especially if you served in the military, very important that we hear from you. And it doesn't have to necessarily be in North Korea or in Korea under DMC, but military, because you understand what the issue is from a military standpoint. So we do want to hear from you at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. I think the president struck the exact right tone here. He's not saying it's out of the question. But let's listen to what John Bolton had to say about this. I think it's important.
I think they have gotten to the point where they're worried that that this administration doesn't respond the way the Obama administration did for the last 8 years. But I think they see in South Korea an opportunity to try and drive a wedge between us and South Korea, or at least force us into these negotiations.
So, Jordan, when you look at it from a bilateral negotiation standpoint, or trilateral here, that's what they're doing.
Yeah, part of the U.S. job, I think, is to go along with what the South Koreans have brokered here so that we could demonstrate to the South Koreans what I believe is the most likely outcome, that you better not trust these North Koreans. And their first attacks will be on your cities, not ours. And it will be South Koreans who will be killed, civilians who will be killed first when they ultimately, if they ultimately attack. But I think right now, post-Olympics, they've got this kind of veneer of, oh, we can make peace, except for in the North Koreans' mind, this conflict only ends if North Korea is in charge of all of Korea. So I don't think that the South Koreans are okay with that. And so long term, I say let us go to the table. Let us if it's right, because it gives us an opportunity to kind of bring our South Korean friends back from the brink. And I think they're on the brink of making some very bad decisions, or mentally have just kind of changed their mindset, and that's not a good thing for their own people.
All right, so first half hour of the broadcast is gone. I want you to support the work of the ACLJ. We're in a matching challenge campaign. You do that at ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. Any amount you donate, we get a matching gift for. I encourage you, your friends, to do that. Our important work around the globe. We're going to be here for another 30 minutes. If you don't get the full hour of the program, a lot of broadcast networks now carry it. But if you don't, just go over to ACLJ.org. We've got it streaming there, both audio and video. Or you can go over to Facebook or Periscope, where you can actually see the TV quality version of this daily broadcast. So either way, we'd love you to do it. But again, don't forget our matching challenge campaign at ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. We're going to be back with more of your calls and comments at 1-800-684-3110 in just a moment.
It's a critical time for our nation and for the world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important than right now. At the ACLJ, we're engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family. Become a member and make a difference as we work to protect your constitutional and religious freedoms. You can become a member of the ACLJ online. Sign up right now, ACLJ.org.
the broadcast. One more silver dollar. I guess that's about what I think the North Koreans are down to. So the United States has been asked to negotiate directly with the North Koreans. They said they're willing to denuclearize, according to a report that came out from North Korea's government through the South Koreans. The president responded, I think this was a great response by the president of the United States. Possible progress being made in talks with North Korea, but listen to the way he couched it. For the first time in many years, a serious effort is being made by all parties concerned. The world is watching and waiting, exclamation point. Maybe false hope, but the U.S. is ready to go hard in either direction being political or diplomatic, I should say, and then military if necessary. All right, we're going to go right to the phones. We got a lot of calls coming in on this topic. We're joined by Colonel Wes Smith, Colonel Skip Ash. Jordan and I are here as well. Let's go ahead.
Trace calling in from Virginia, online 3. Trace, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Trace.
Awesome. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I couldn't agree with you more about the sanctions. We cannot give concessions prior to talks. And I think what they're going to do is bring a pity party to the table and try and force that. But I think that Kim is going to use these talks as a barometer, because in one of the previous segments, the statement was made that that Kim can't predict President Trump.
Right.
And if we give in, there's his predictability right there. He will never respect the president again, and he'll do what he wants.
What do you think, Wes?
Yeah, I think going into the negotiations, no matter who's doing the negotiating, you try to size up the opposition. And I think certainly the North Koreans will be trying to figure Donald Trump out. But whoever is representing the United States will be trying to figure out the North Korean delegation. But Trace is right. We need to go into this with our eyes wide open.
And Trace, you serve in the active duty military?
I do.
What do you do?
I work in aviation.
Oh,
and I have a previous tour in Korea. I can tell you that the Republic of Korea, South Korea, is an absolutely wonderful country. And it would be great if those in the country who want to reunite could have that and have it under the correct terms. But I just don't feel that we can trust this guy at all.
I understand what you're saying, Trace. I want to go to Colonel Skip Ash to get his opinion on this. He also served in the region, actually at the DMZ. And your response to Trace. Trace, great call. Thank you very much.
Well, I think Trace is exactly right. The thing we need to remember is normally we've gone into this in the past. They have been such a basket case that we give them something as a sign of good faith. We don't need to do that. We need to have them and say, you need to show a sign of good faith. We need deeds, not words, from their side. And they need to be significant deeds before we lighten up any on the sanctions or anything else. We need to make sure that they understand that the rules of the game have changed. If they want peace, they can have peace, but not on their terms, on our terms.
All right, let's go ahead. Do we have time for another? We can take a call. Quick one. 1-800-684-3110. I'll tell you what, we'll wait on that.
Yeah, wait.
Let's talk about the diplomatic side of this, because the president's laying out what I call the olive branch of diplomacy here in response to Kim Jong-un's. So, Jordan, you deal with a lot of diplomatic issues.
Yep.
You've been all over the world on diplomatic missions. Yep. What's your sense of how to handle
that? You have to take advantage of them to a point, and so this would be his administration's first opportunity to sit down with the North Koreans. Will it be thwarted before it even happens? As we've seen in the past, it could be. That's why he said this could be false hope. He's not under any false sense he's not looking at this through rose-colored glasses, if you will. He's looking at it through the reality. And the reality is that if you even can get to the table, that's a big step, because in the past they started testing nuclear devices so that kind of thwart the sitting down and negotiations. But you have to take those steps, if they're available, to build a case for potential military action. And right now, the case is not just at the international level where North Korea poses a threat. The case has to be made to South Korea, who right now is coming out of the Olympics and saying, rah, rah, see, we could do things together. And they're kind of forgetting the mindset of their northern neighbors and how they've been treated by their northern neighbors. And that people still risk their lives every day to flee that regime and get shot up running across the border.
It reminds me of negotiating with the Palestinian Authority. You give them everything you think they want, and they're still refusing to sign it.
These guys got nukes.
Yeah, except these guys have nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
So this is a different level. All right, when we come back from the break, we're going to take your call at 1-800-684-3110. We've got a special video coming up in just a moment on this topic. And also let me say that we want to encourage you to support the work of the ACLJ. You can do that at aclj.org. We'll be back with more, including your phone calls, in just a moment.
It's a critical time for our nation and for the world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important than right now. At the ACLJ, we're engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family. Defending human life. Standing up for our good friend Israel. Working to uncover the deep state, the massive corruption in Washington. Battling to end the genocide of Christians in many parts of the world. And a firm commitment to back constitutional efforts to protect our country from radical Islamic terrorists. You can learn more about the mission and work of the ACLJ online at aclj.org. There's not a better time to stand with the ACLJ. Become a member and make a difference as we work to protect your constitutional and religious freedoms. You can become a member of the ACLJ online. Sign up right now, aclj.org. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
Try not to like Can't You See by the Marshall Tucker Band or the Jay Sekulow Band's version of the Marshall Tucker Band tune, Can't You See, a great one. All right, we've got a lot of calls we're going to take. I did want to ask this. We were talking about this during the break, and that is, Wes, you raised the point, and I think this is a valid point, of we don't know exactly what the North Koreans are willing to stop doing. It's not, is it a freeze? Is it a dismantling? But your concern is they've already detonated.
Yeah, they have done six successful test of a nuclear bomb. So for them to say we're going to freeze our program and we're not going to do any more tests, you know, exactly how big of an offer is that? Whenever we dropped, unfortunately, you know, because of the World War II, the bombs on Japan, we had only tested one bomb, and yet we dropped two on Japan. So they have successfully tested six. So to say we're not going to do any more tests, what they're really working on, they have the science pretty well in hand of how to explode a nuclear bomb. What they're working on are two things, and that is trying to miniaturize that bomb so you can put it on a missile, and secondly, trying to perfect the guidance systems on the missiles.
Yep.
And both of those things, to a large extent, Jay, can be done in a laboratory.
So Skip, from your standpoint, what do you think we're negotiating for here? Is it the dismantling of, or is it a freeze? What's a good negotiation?
What we need to achieve is a dismantling, so it puts them back. If they have the capability just sitting there and not doing anything with it, over time you have to understand that maybe there'll be some problems with the bombs and the missiles if they're not tested periodically. But for us, the only acceptable solution is they don't have it. And even then, if they were to back off and destroy some of their things, they still have the knowledge to be able to build it up again. So what we need is to have them dismantle so that we have some notice if they go back to trying to redo this technology.
A lot of people on Facebook are saying dismantle. I mean, pretty much no question. 1-800-684-3110. Jordan, let's take another call.
Yeah, back to the phones we go. Let's go to Mark in Missouri online. To Mark, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hey, Mark.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much,
sure.
And great show. My question is, how important is South Korea's role in all this? How important to the U.S. in particular, obviously, but how important is their role?
Very significant, because they're their neighbor, and they are the first strike would be against the South Koreans if there was any kind of military action. I just don't have a good read on where the South Korean government is right now. They played, everybody's playing nice
right
during the Olympics, and there was nice statements. But then Skip pointed out that they were also burning North Korean flags in the street, and
right,
pictures of Kim Jong-un.
Yeah, South Korea is a democracy, very much like the United States, and so and they elect their presidents. And so there, different administrations have taken different tacks towards North Korea. President Moon, the fairly newly elected president of South Korea, tends to be part of a more progressive party. And in the past, because they've had conservative presidents and more liberal presidents in South Korea, in the past, the more liberal presidents have taken a much softer approach towards North Korea. They want to believe, they want to hope that there's a way to peacefully unite the peninsula and what have you. But as we're fond of saying in the military, hope is not a strategy. And but this particular South Korean administration is a little softer on the intents and the motives of North Korea.
Okay. Thanks. Skip, your sense the same?
It's similar. I remember that South Korea is a democracy, and democracies tend not want to deal with things that they can put off. So they would like to have a peaceful situation so they don't have to spend money on things like the military, which in peacetime really just sucks in funds and is only a deterrent, and how much do you need to deter? So to me, it's sort of like the democracies in the pre-World War II era. You know, they see this danger, but they don't want to deal with it because it's painful to deal with it. And yet, if they don't deal with it in time, then they're the ones who suffer.
Yeah. All right, let's go. We'll take another call. I want to ask Jordan this question, though, because as you look at this from a diplomatic, the kind of the politics of this,
right.
Is this an issue that, I mean, we're getting a lot of phone calls here at 800-684-3110, but are a lot of Americans focusing in on this?
I think when this news hit, I mean, I tweeted it out today because I think it was significant. I don't tweet things out on news like foreign policy that I don't believe are significant. I think it's significant when you get a headline that says North Korea willing to talk about freezing and ultimately abandoning their nuclear weapons program. That is something very significant, because if we have to take a military option here, U.S. troops will die. They will be killed in action. Many South Koreans will likely lose their lives. There will be large loss of life on the North Korean side. I mean, be a major conflict.
Yeah.
So they need to start paying attention to this, because I think what we're doing is taking that first step as an administration on trying to do this diplomatically.
Yep.
With the understanding that in the past, this has never worked. It has sometimes slowed things down, but it has never worked. The second part of this will be, is the Trump administration under Secretary Mattis willing? I mean, how long would they wait
on the military
until they
side?
Felt like they had to use military action? Because, again, it could be so catastrophic.
I think the time for strategic patience is wearing out.
Yeah. Yes, I mean,
I can't see this president allowing Kim Jong-un to do another nuclear bomb test. I just don't see it.
And one that would actually, yeah. So, I mean,
that could have an impact on the region.
At this point, then, I mean, the American people need to be paying attention, because this could have ramifications past just partisan politics.
That's why I wanted to bring that up.
The president is going to be the president for at least the next 3 years. He will be making these decisions on when it comes to being a commander in chief. Midterm elections will not impact that. And so because of that, every American should be paying close attention. I think this is a potential for a much bigger conflict than what would happen outside of like Syria.
Yep.
Those are conflicts and they're serious, but you know, we're not dealing with that kind of nuclear power.
All right, let's take a call. Let's go to call on line one.
Yeah, we'll go to Daryl, calling from Oregon on line one. Daryl, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Daryl, you're on the air.
Thank you. My opinion is that I think we should strategically release a small portion of the sanctions. And I called in because I've heard a unanimity on that opinion to keep maintaining all of the sanctions throughout the talks. I think it would be appropriate to maintain some of the sanctions to show them that we are willing to work with them, but then to maintain the majority of the sanctions until the North Koreans show through their performance that they're performing to the extent that we require.
So, and Daryl, I understand that you served in Korea with the Marines.
Yes.
Okay. Well, look, I think that it raises a very important point, and that is, do you give some intermittent relief? This is what, Daryl, I think you're talking about, like intermittent relief, food, let's say, for the populace, as you start the negotiations as a confidence-building measure. I mean, that's not an illegitimate. I mean, that's a legitimate
negotiating process in diplomacy.
Right. That's a legitimate way of going about it. If we had not gone about it so many times in the past and it didn't work. And I think it was during the Bush administration when we gave them tons and tons of food.
Yeah.
It did not get to the people. He used it to feed his military because his military is almost as malnourished as his civilian population. So it just hasn't worked.
Yeah. So to Daryl's point, Skip, what's your sense of that? If you did a small amount of relief, maybe the food that you know was going to the civilian population as a confidence-building measure, and then keeping the other ones in place. What's your sense?
If there were some way that we could ensure that it went to the civilian population, I would not disagree. The problem is, as Wes stated, is that the government controls everything, and they will reinforce those who keep the regime in power, which is the military and the elite. So they're the ones who are going to get the benefit of this, and the military sucks up so much of the population that if it were fuel or anything like that, that would immediately go to the military. Food will go to the military and the elite. And therefore, I think all we do is strengthen the hand of those in power, and that's not to our advantage.
I'm going to take William's call out of Macon quickly. William, you're on the air. Go ahead.
All right, Jay. This is my question. My statement really quick. I think me being a veteran of 8 years,
yes, sir,
serving in the military, my strategy would be if we're going to have these close sanction talks with North Korea. North Korea, we need to keep a close eye at the same time on activities going on in Iran.
Yeah.
Because that's going to be the key factor to show where their motives are.
Yep.
Because if we turn the blind eye towards Iran, why are we doing the talks and sanctions? You
raise a really valid point, and that is we've been concerned about the North Korea, Jordan, the North Korea-Iran connection for a long time, and Wes talked about it.
Yeah, of course. I mean, we have a large enough military and a big enough diplomatic force to do both at the same time. I mean, so you're right. You cannot just 100% focus on one and then ignore what's happening in another place. But these are two different stations of our military as well. We've got kind of those who are in the Pacific, those who are in the Persian Gulf, in that region of the world. And remember, we're talking about Iran. We're talking about it, 8 years until they have this kind of capability legally. In North Korea's situation, I mean, it's basically there. So it is a different threat level posed immediately. Now, long-term problems with both. But North Korea actually poses a bigger threat with nuclear weapons more immediately than Iran does. And I think that cannot be understated. And so, of course, you focus on both. But North Korea has got the real potential right now.
That's real quick here. With Iran.
Yeah. On January 30th, Mike Pompeo, in an interview, the director of the CIA, said that given things just as they are now, that in a handful of months, that Korea will have the miniature weapon on an ICBM.
Yeah. So this is live as it's happening. I mean, this is not a something down the road. This is right now. All right, we come back from the break. We're going to take your calls, 800-684-3110. We open a couple lines for you.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture. and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.
All right, last segment, folks. We're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. Let's go right back to the phones, Jordan. Let's go to line five. He's been holding
a long
time.
Let's go to Chris in Nevada on line five. Chris, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hey, Chris, go ahead.
Hi, two questions. One, why does North Korea even want a nuclear weapon when they're not being threatened except for the fact that they want to acquire one? And second, what's the end result if North Korea's regime is taken out? Does it become one democratic nation?
Well, let's talk about the – let's break this down. These are two really good questions. Why does North Korea want a nuclear weapon, Skip?
They believe that that's the only way that they can protect their regime. They can't do it economically. They can't do it with their traditional forces. So they believe only with a nuclear weapon that would elevate them to the status of one of the few nuclearized states in the world, and that would be sufficient threat to keep everyone else, to especially the United States, from wanting to attack them. So they view that as an insurance policy.
Wes?
It is an insurance policy. Kim Jong-un looks at Muammar Gaddafi in Libya. And Muammar Gaddafi, after 9/11, gave up all of his research and development for nuclear weapons and decided to become a team player, as it were. And yet, during the Obama administration, under Secretary of State Clinton, they went in and overthrew Gaddafi, and he is no more. His own people killed him. Kim Jong-un looks at that bit of history, and he fears that if he doesn't have a nuclear weapon, that we will facilitate an overthrow of his regime, and it will be the end of probably of his life. And I think that's why he wants it. Skip's right. It's an insurance policy.
I also think it's because they want to be deemed, and I'll get Jordan's opinion on this, they want to be deemed a major player on the world stage. And having a nuclear capability allows them to be a major player on the world stage.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, so obviously, if you allow them, though, to be a major player on the world stage, you're allowing a very dangerous regime, evil regime, to be a major player on the world stage. So that is why at some point you cannot allow that to happen. You cannot allow North Korea to be forced into being treated like a country which you must treat with kid gloves. Same with Iran. These are countries that you need to be able to sanction whenever you feel like it with crippling sanctions, and they have no real way of responding back. Because if they've got nuclear weapons they can fire back at you, guess what you're not going to be doing? Issuing really crippling sanctions. You know, when we sanction Russia, they're very specific sanctions targeted at individuals. They don't impact all their food supplies and oil supplies and their resources. They impact specific individuals and industries. That is because Russia has nuclear weapons. Same thing goes with China. It's very specific and targeted to individuals and corporations because they have nuclear weapons. So you don't want Iran and North Korea to be treated that way.
Correct.
If you have to treat them that way, they are really, they almost in a sense have more control than you do.
Yeah, and that's really a good position.
Which is
to be
a
in.
Very dangerous position for the world
no
to
question.
Be in.
All right, let's go ahead and take another call.
Yeah, let's go to Edward in Pennsylvania on line three. Edward, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Edward.
Yes, thank you. I served in Korea in the late 60s.
Wow,
I have a statement to make and a question.
Okay.
The statement is I think that we should continue the sanctions through much prayer. And I have a question for you, gentlemen. God bless you. What is the status of the food for North Korea? How much food do they have left?
Now, so their civilian population, it's depleted, right, Wes?
They are suffering. The North Korean soldier who recently risked his life and was wounded, shot by his fellow guards when he crossed the DMZ, he was admitted to a South Korean hospital, and they took great care of him. But he was extremely malnourished and had tapeworms and all kinds of parasites in his body, and he was one of their soldiers. The civilian population has even less resources when it comes to food and things. It's a sad situation.
So, let me ask you this, Skip. So, I mean, because the problem is part of the North Korean psyche is they view the Kim Jong-un as deity.
Right.
And we find that hard to believe in the West, but that's how they view it.
They absolutely do. In fact, it's interesting that they actually believe the propaganda that the United States actually wants to destroy them, and it's the Kim regime itself that has protected the North Koreans all this time, and that without the Kim regime, they would be overrun by these Americans who are, You know, they've got propaganda about us bayoneting babies and all sorts of things, and they see that everywhere. Remember also that they only have one radio station. When you buy a radio in North Korea, you can't adjust it. You only get the station there. They only have the official stations on television. So all they hear is propaganda, and they've grown up in that. They have songs that they sing every day about Kim Jong-un and home for the kids and everything else. So it is really, they've set him up as a demigod, and therefore their whole security is in the Kim family.
Yes, I mean, so this is, again, understanding a mindset, which, you know, when you talk about North Korea, you have to understand their kind of state religion based around this family. When you go to Iran, you have to understand this Shia, more radical Shia, mystical but yet radical version of Islam that they're operating under with the supreme leader. Again, so when you look at these, you cannot look at it through the normal logical ways we used to conduct war between even regimes we considered evil and kind of maniacal dictators, but that were in a sense somewhat logical on the battlefield. That's not the case here. I mean, these can be very self-destructive regimes, regimes that don't care about the loss of life of their own people, the way they're, I mean, we see that just by how the soldiers are treated. The soldiers of their own country are treated, and they're the front lines of defense, and that yet they're not healthy. So you have to go into this with a very different mindset, hope that you can achieve things diplomatically, but be prepared that is very unlikely. That is the most unlikely of scenarios. Whether you're dealing with Iran or whether you're dealing with North Korea, that you're going to be able to achieve denuclearization of either of those countries through only diplomatic means. It will likely take military action at some point. In North Korea, that would appear to be sooner rather than later. In Iran, that would be probably a little bit later because they're not as far along with their programs.
Let's go ahead and take the last call for the day.
Yep, Debbie in Georgia on line 6.
Hi, Debbie.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Mine is more just a statement, but I wanted to add on to the propaganda statement that when I was stationed in Camp Casey back in late 90s.
Thanks for your service.
And thank you. And so we always found propaganda, anti-American propaganda, even in South Korea. I couldn't understand what it said, but it was pretty obvious it was anti-American. But my statement that I wanted just to kind of add was when I served over there, I was just there for a year. Was I didn't get a very welcome feeling from the South Koreans in general, for the most part. I did have some good experiences with some of them, but not necessarily the majority.
Yeah.
But also to add to that, the Katusas, the Koreans that worked alongside us in the military, I could not speak more highly of, because not only were they very well trained, but they really, really wanted to learn along with us. And
sure.
I felt perfectly competent and felt that they were perfectly competent and capable if anything was to happen.
Debbie,
that
I appreciate you calling in. Let me get Wes and Skip really quickly here, Skip, and then we'll go to Wes. I mean, like in 15 seconds. What was your sense with the civilian Korean population?
I think, especially around Camp Casey and the big military installations, there's always a resentment about the military coming in and dating the girls and things like that. So I think that's not unusual. The farther away you get from a military installation, I think the more we were accepted and they appreciate our being there, especially the older ones.
Yeah,
my experience, and I was there during the same time that Debbie was, is that the Korean military, very pro-American. The generation who lived during the war and the first generation after that were very pro-American. Some of the younger college students, university students
not
were
so
not
much.
So much.
All right, well, that does it for the broadcast today. Don't forget our matching challenge campaign at ACLJ.org. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.